see you.
Oh.
Nice to see you, to see you.
Nice.
If you'd have been outside that cell in Platt Lane Police Station early hours that morning, you'd have heard me chattering. I was going through a rough patch, although on the surface, everything seemed well sound. It was at the height of my drug dealing days. I'd began by selling weed, speed and trips in some clubs and nightclubs, pubs and nightclubs in the city centre. I set up shop after that in a flat that I'd rented. There was this old boy in Hume who had a flat in a tower block that was claiming housing benefit for, but it was empty, so I moved in, paid him 50 quid a week. You could call this subletting. This was so much better than renting for one of Manchester's local estate agents. No ID needed, if you get what I'm saying. Word got out that my business model had changed from personal delivery to in-store pickup only. The door didn't stop because a heroin epidemic had hit, and I happened to be there in that window of opportunity to catch it. The money was good, but you know, I wasn't doing it to make a profit. I was doing it to spend the profit on getting off it. So my firm was kind of like a non-profit making organisation. Still, I had some cash, the car, the clobber, the crew grand, and the sovereign rings. As I say, on the face of it, you think everything was going my way. But in reality, I was battling with a drug habit that was heavy. Platt Lane Police Station was just 10 minutes away. They cuffed me up, taking me in, and charged me with something drug-related. They didn't give you meds back then. I was a few days in. I was cold, sweating, and shivering. You should have seen me. I looked like a plucked skinny wet turkey with damp feeler tracky bottoms on. I looked out of the hatch in the cell door, and there was this little 3-foot-tall creature sat with its legs crossed on the floor. It was scrawny, its skull was flat, and it had a white Arab's head scarf tied around it. And just in front of it on the ground was a spoon and a big bag of brown. It piled a load out with the blade and piled it onto the spoon. "Mate, hey mate, give me some of that. I've got some money in my property. I'll pay you when I get out." It looked up and smiled. Its teeth were all black and broken. "Come on, man, I'm rattling here big time." Next minute, I heard keys jangling, you've guessed it. An officer was walking down the corridor opposite towards my door. "Hurry up, the copper's coming, the copper's coming." He got closer and closer and closer. And then do you know what he did? He only went and walked straight through the creature that was sat on the floor. "What are you babbling on about in there, you?" It freaked me right out. You can see that that rough patch I was going through at that stage had got, well, scary. Paul, who you'll find in the later pages of the good book, went through a bunch of these on his shift. In fact, he made a list of them and left it for us to look at. Spent terms in prison, whipped many times, beaten with steel rods loads, stoned with tons of rocks, shipwrecked more than once, lived without food and water twice. Phew, what a list. I'm so glad times have changed, aren't you? Getting stoned back then meant something different than what it does now. I know each of us could make a list of the rough patches we've gone through on our shift. We wouldn't be putting ones like these on there, though, would we? Apart from the jail time one, if you're like me. But we might put some on there that have been, in a way, just as rough or even 10 times rougher. Can these rough patches teach us anything, though? Too right they can, and I'm going to take a minute to find out what. For a start, the rough patches you go through can set you up for a better tomorrow. Just imagine for a moment that you're scrolling through a newspaper app on your phone, looking for an article that's been written about you. Scroll, 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 scroll. There it is. Tap. Scroll, scroll, scroll. Scroll, that part's not right. Scroll, 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 scroll. that part's wrong as well. What would you do? Phone the paper? Phone your partner? Phone a friend? Or turn a blind eye like I did when it kept happening to me? There was a time then when you'd find me doing stuff with the media for about 6 years or so. I was on their radar as a go-to person for opinions related to drugs and criminality. We even set up a second office down Media City in Salford, just across from the BBC. When it came to doing interviews, I had a simple plan. I'd always talk on the issue, get my story in, and mention the title of my book. Up there for thinking, as my dad used to say. I remember doing one radio interview on the go with BBC Midlands Today. Sat in my car on a pub car park in Withenshaw, because my phone had 5 bars there. Sky TV came to our main offices once in a van with a massive satellite dish on the top. I did a live piece to camera in the back entry. Then there was the newspapers as well. All they were interested in was writing about my journey. How it goes with the papers is, you chat with a journalist, then they would write your story up in their own style. And you didn't always get to proofread it. The articles they did with headlines like "Heroin Addict Flips His Methadone Script" and "From Dope Dealing to Hope Dealing," plus many others that were even vintage cheddar cheesier. Sometimes had a little too much, just a little, journalistic creativity and ambition in them, if you get what I'm saying. I wasn't 10 when I first started using drugs. My homemade wooden go-kart was enough for a buzz back then. I didn't supply heroin by the ton. I sold little plastic bags full of it from my sublet. I've not spent 39 years behind bars. I'm only 37 now. At first, it bothered me. But after a bit, it didn't. Because to be fair, they got more things right than they did wrong. There was one part that they always got right. Each, in their own words, wrote about how my time spent in the madness has positioned me to do what I get to do now. And you know, that's totally what's happened. Just think, why was I on the media's radar in the first place? Listen, the rough patches you go through can set you up for a better tomorrow. This is what Joseph from the Good Book found out as well. He ended up in prison for something he hadn't done. This all started with his brothers who had a beef with him, yet later he became a leader. After all this had gone on, he said to his brothers, "You meant to harm me, but God made it turn out for the best." What about you and your rough patches? Maybe they've lasted a long while, or maybe they've been quite quick. It could be that you've revisited the same ones. Listen, whatever yours have looked like, you've got to know this, that God can make those tough times turn out for the best. Listen, the rough patches you go through can set you up for a better tomorrow. I was dealing brown and my habit was heavy. I was put in a cell and I wasn't well. Hey, mate, give me some of that. I've got some money in my property. The rough patches you go through can set you up for a better tomorrow. And the rough patches you go through don't have to be done on your lonesome. You should have been in that jail that week when I was in there to listen to the ladies speak. You'd have seen me sitting on the edge of my seat, taking in every word and manhandling my mixed emotions. You would? You'd have seen me. I'd gone in there 4 weeks before to do some training on how to tell your story. And as I was listening to them tell their stories, I'm thinking, there's some other people that I could have done with hearing this. Those people that are all prisoners with the same brush. They're all lowlifes. They deserve what they get. Lock them up and throw away the key. No, they haven't got a clue. Because the fact is, there's all kinds of people doing time. Just in that room alone, there were those who'd been born into a life of crime. There were those who turned to crime to survive or to support somebody they care for. And there were those who'd been victims of trauma and victims of crime themselves who have ended up crossing the line. Take Jill. She'd been well keen right from the start, since I started going in, to do the training. She's switched on, seems dead genuine, and she got to experience some creative and ambitious journalists during child trial. Jill was happily married. She had two wonderful kids, a budding career, a nice house, and two cars. Then one day, she saw a message on her husband's phone from a woman. She didn't say anything, but she started to watch him. It turned out, as you can guess, he was having an affair. They split up and she lived as a single parent for ages. Then she started browsing on a dating website. After a while, she met a guy. At first, it was bliss. He was her Prince Charming until he became cold and controlling. Things went from bad to worse. And in the end, she reacted. Now she's in prison. Talk about it in a rough patch. During her time inside, though, she's began a journey with the big man. And from then on, she's known that she's not in this alone because he's been with her every step of the way. Listen, the rough patches you go through don't have to be done on your lonesome. The week after that week, I sent a quick email to the chaplain at HMP somewhere in the UK.gov.uk. Could you ask Jill if I could have permission to use a story, please? Next day, message in my inbox. Yes, Jill is happy for you to use a story. And she also asked me to give you this verse out of the Bible, which has meant so much to her since God stepped in. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Maybe you've just hit some sort of rough patch. Or you might be in the middle of one. Maybe things have gone from bad to worse. You might have even crossed the line. Listen, the rough patches you go through don't have to be done on your lonesome. I was dealing brown and my habit was heavy. I was put in a cell and I wasn't well. Hey, mate, give me some of that. I've got some money in my property. The rough patches you go through can set you up for a better tomorrow. They don't have to be done on your lonesome, and the rough patches you go through are good spots for you to take stock. There's a fella from a fishing town in the sticks who did this. So I heard. Let me tell you about him. He's got short, dark hair, a strong coastal accent, and a cheeky smile. His parents were hard-working people, and he was a chirpy kid. At school, he messed about with comments on reports like always distracted and a distraction. He was 12 when he first smoked weed. He was at his mate's house, wearing headphones, listening to INXS's Suicide Blonde. He thought, this is it. This is me. So I heard. He started sniffing petrol and solvents as well after that. By the time he'd left school and got a job at the fish factory, he got fed up of all the uppers, all the party drugs, and was taking downers the opposite. One night he went to his dealers. All he had was brown, so he scored some, took it, and he thought, wow, now this is it. This is death on me. He ended up taking it every day. So I heard. After lying, cheating and stealing for 15 years, he hit rock bottom. That's when he wandered into an outreach cafe in town wearing odd trainers. His man's best pal worked at a shoe shop. One had been in the window on display, so she got them cheap. One was beige and the other was brown. So I heard. People in the outreach cafe cared, so he kept on going in. Then one morning, him and his mate went on a day bender. At 2 in the afternoon, he collapsed on Main Street. He OD'd. The ambulance came and rushed him to hospital. So I heard. When he came round a few hours later, he was lying in a hospital bed, and there was two guys from the outreach cafe who'd been helping him, standing either side of him. They'd found out and gone to check how he was. Just before they left, one of them said to him, "Have you had enough?" Then, as he lay there, he started thinking, asking himself questions. Is this what my life's going to be? Am I going to wake up rattling every day? Am I always going to be scheming to get 20 quid to score? Am I always going to be hurting the people around me? After weighing things up, he grabbed his phone. "Mate, I've been thinking. I have had enough. Told you, it took stock. So I heard." And do you know where I heard this from and those other things? Straight from the horse's mouth, because the guy, Paul Innes, is a good friend of mine who's now a chaplain in Grampian Prison on the northeast coast of Scotland, where he's from, in the sticks. Listen, the rough patches you go through are good spots for you to take stock. There's a big name biblical figure who went through loads like loads. This made him take stock. His name's David. He said, "I thought on my ways." Maybe you've been going through something rough and you've been thinking. It could be that you need to ask yourself some questions to weigh things up. Maybe you're ready to say, "I've had enough." Listen, the rough patches you go through are good spots for you to take stock. "I was dealing brown and my habit was heavy. I was put in a cell and I wasn't well. Hey, mate, give me some of that. I've got some money in my property." The rough patches you go through can set you up for a better tomorrow. They don't have to be done on your lonesome. They're good spots for you to take stock. And not only them, the rough patches you go through can be places to make a change to your narrative. Do you know, my main rough patch lasted 15 years. For most of it, I was with Lisa. And during that time, as partners in crime, we got up to all kinds together. A lot of what went on is blurred by the chaos, literally, but not everything. Especially when it's been ages and you bump into each other like we did. Her hair's not long anymore, but she's still got a gold ring in her nose. A way with colourful words and a twang that you recognise anywhere. We ended up round at hers, chatting and reminiscing. It felt bizarre being sat in her flat in a tiny living room with a massive telly on the wall, surrounded by smoke and the smell of weed. Baz, do you remember the times when we were that skint? That we'd go to Doug's blankety blank shop and get a bag of spuds and a loaf of bread on tick so we could have chip putties for tea. And you remember that time when we're staying at Teresa and Ben's and you broke into the blankety blank electric meter and then super glued the lock after putting a cloth in the bottom so it didn't sound empty when they put coins in? Of course I do, Lise. Hey, Lise, do you remember when I used to write to you from prison using code, telling you what drugs I wanted you to bring in? Say hi to Billy. Billy Whiz. Billy from me. My pad mate's into funk. He likes James Brown. There were others that came to mind, some I wouldn't repeat in public. As we were chatting, though, it was obvious that she got the wrong end of the stick. She thought I was going to go back. She might have even emptied a bedroom cupboard out for me to put me clothes in when she nipped to the loo. She was buzzing. Until I dropped the bombshell. "I've got God now, Lise. My life's changed." "Well, blankety blank, 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 blank." "No way. Are you blankety blank having me on?" "No, I'm not, Lise. It happened not too long after I split." You should have seen the look on her face when that penny finally dropped. She only swallowed the cap on her front tooth that she super glued in. I could do with go round again sometime, actually, though, you know, just to make sure she's got over the shock and she managed to get her tooth back in. Listen, the rough patches you go through can be places for you to make a change to your narrative. Watch 2,000 years ago, 2,000 miles away, God who flung the stars into space, God who spoke the universe into being, he put skin on, his name is Jesus. He came to this earth and he was tempted just like you, but he resisted. They nailed him to a cross. His final words were, "It is finished." This is as rough patch will ever get. He went through that for you, though. Because he died on that cross to pay the price for your faults, flaws, and failures. He died on that cross so that you can make a change to your narrative. But it's up to you. Because you have something to do. Me and Lisa left Teresa and Ben's before the Lecky Man was due to come and read the meter, to dodge the drama. Wise move, don't you think? After that, we finished up in a squat. Squatting then was common. Some of you know. But there was squatting and squatting. We squatted on the ball rings in Hume there. You find an empty flat, boot the door in, move in, go to Moss Side Council, tell them, and then make you the tenants. This is posh squatting. Then there was the other kind of squatting that I'm going to call pauper squatting. Well, this was that. It was just across from the PSV club. This had been the venue that Factory Records had used before they built the Hacienda. By now, it was mainly reggae bands playing there. The squat was a ground floor flat that was completely boarded over front and back. There was no gas, electricity or furniture. All it had in the living room was some dirty cushions scattered about, and it had a massive tree trunk lay on the floor with loads of hypodermic needles stuck into it. To get in, you'd pull one of the boards away outside, slide behind it and climb in through the window that had a bus lock. When this one came to mind recently when I was driving, it made me think, God will never pull away a board, slide behind it and climb through the window of our lives like that. Because they'll only gain entry through the legal entry. Through the door. Which we need to open so that he can get in. You see, God's not a squatter. There's a sentence in the good book where he says, I have come, or my purpose is to give you a rich and satisfying life. Thing is, though, you need to let him get in. The rough patches you go through can be places to make a change to your narrative, but you've got something to do. What are you going to do? Let's wrap this up now. Back where we began, the height of my drug dealing days, I'd set up shop in a squat, or set up shop in a flat in a tower block. On the surface, everything seemed dead sound. I got cuffed up and taken to Platt Lane Police Station. A couple of days in, I was rattling. Then I saw the officer walking down the corridor towards my door, walk right through that creature. Freaked me right out. This happened during one of the rough patches I've gone through. One for my list. And as I said before, each of us could make a list of these. And I've just taken a minute to find out what they can teach us. Please stand. If you're able, that is, please. Right now, God wants to gain entry. But you need to open your door so that he can get in. I'm going to pray a prayer. And I'm going to invite two groups of people in this room to pray this prayer with me. The first group, those in this room, you've never given God access to your life before. It could be that you believe in God and you didn't know you needed to open your door. It could be that you're searching for God and you've not found him. It could be that you're struggling with the God thing. Pray this prayer. If you've never prayed a prayer before to open your door so that God can step into your story, pray this prayer with me. The second group of people, those people, you've prayed a prayer at some point in the past. And you started your faith journey, but for whatever reason, right now, it's not happening for you. Open your door again. Let God have access once more. So, Everybody else, by the way, you make up the third group. If you can pray this prayer to encourage the first group and the second group, that would be great. Let's all pray together. Repeat after me. Dear God, I come to you today and I admit that I'm not perfect. God, I ask that you forgive me for all my faults, for all my flaws, and for all my failures. God, I ask that you wipe my slate clean, because right now, I'm opening my door so that you can gain access. Because God, I'm saying, I've had enough and I want to change my narrative. If you prayed that prayer, you're part of the first group or the second group. Can you put up your hand? Put up your hand so I can see it. One, got two, brilliant. Three people. Three people's put up their hands. I'm going to count down 5 seconds to give the rest of you 5 seconds to put up your hand. There's more of you in this room who's prayed that prayer. I'm going to say this. Park your pride outside. Put it in your pocket. Put it in your jacket. Get it out of the way. As I count down 5 seconds, the three of you who've raised your hand, you don't need to raise it again. We know who you are. But the rest of you in this room, if you've prayed that prayer, you're part of the first group or the second group. As I count down 5 seconds, it's giving you 5 extra seconds. Anybody else? 5. As I count down. Another two. Thank you very much. Anybody else as I count down? Got you there before. Thank you. Anybody else? 4. Anybody else? 3. Park your pride outside. Anybody else? 2. Anybody else? Got you there. Fantastic. It's about 7 people, 8 people. Okay, I'm going to count to 3. And because there's quite a few of you, on the point of 3, what I want you to do, just go through that door. Someone's going to come meet you in that room round the side. Why? I've brought some packs with me, and inside those packs is something that I want you to... Firstly, there's a DVD in there that we've created that we want... Well, it's actually a code that takes you to a DVD or takes you to some content on our website where I talk about what did I do next. There's also a little booklet in there that's been wrote by a friend of mine called Jay John. That's for you to take home with you, and the church is going to chat with you for a few minutes. That's all. So all those people who've raised your hand, 7 or 8 people, if you can... On the point of 3, you can leave your seats. And if you didn't raise your hand, you can still go. Are we ready? 1, 2, 3. You go now. All those, let's give them a round of applause as they're going through that door. That is fantastic. That is fantastic. Fantastic.